On Tech News Today, Amazon's new game console, Apple's new solar patent, and Jason Calacanis's new joint. Coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Tuesday, January 28th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral, the cloud-based phone system that we use here at Twit. And it just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conferencing feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at under $25 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone and get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT1. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the top tech news in 30 minutes or less. Well, it's National Blueberry Pancake Day. How
what?
Are you celebrating?
I did not get that memo, but I know what I'm doing after the show.
That's right. We should have brought some for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, online retailer Amazon is planning to sell a TV box that doubles as a gaming console for less than $300. The information comes from the video game blog VG247, which claims several sources who have been briefed on the hardware. Like Amazon's Kindle tablets, the box will run on Android, according to the report, and the device is being created by Amazon's design subsidiary, Lab 126, according to posts. Those are the same people who created the Kindle devices, and they're a pretty top-notch outfit. This is kind of amazing. You know, we've heard the rumors for a long time, and it's kind of amazing that they're shooting for an under $300 price point for a gaming system and a TV box. It's pretty low, but, you know, Amazon has a history of subsidizing their devices because they're going to make it up from the sale of content. Is this something, do you think Amazon has a prayer of competing in space, in this space, against Microsoft and Apple and Google and everybody else?
Well, I mean, if you compare it to something like the Kindle, which the Kindle to me has always seemed like, well, it's kind of a limited thing. It does one thing pretty well, and Amazon is the one that benefits because that's the only place you can buy anything from. But people love their Kindles. Kindle readers are happy folks, and the Kindle has a few different models and has gotten a lot better. So if you kind of compare that to Amazon's version of a TV box that already exists in various different forms, do I want something that's Amazon-based content only? Well, after having something like a Roku where I can use Amazon on demand, I can buy movies, TV shows, that sort of thing, I think, why would I want just that? But Amazon has already proved that, for the most part, their customer base doesn't really care. As long as they have Amazon, trust Amazon, one click, easy, you got my information already, I think it would actually be really attractive to a lot of people, especially since they can undercut something like an Xbox price.
It's a good point, and I think Amazon has a number of really powerful advantages. One of them is that there's a lot of confusion around streaming TV. You know, a lot of people don't even know what a Roku box is, a lot of general TV consumers. And there are so many players in this space that it's difficult to understand what's real, what's coming, what's prototype. Is Apple going to come out with the TV? Is there Apple TV going to be upgraded into something more compelling? What's going on? Amazon has 200 million people who are, you know, customers. They have a website. Remember, when they launched the Kindle, originally, they had the Kindle advertised, marketed, like a hard sell on the very front page of Amazon.com for like a year or more. It was really an aggressive push for all their customers to know everything there was to know about the Kindle, and they succeeded with that strategy. They have 10 million people who subscribe to the $79 a month Prime service, and you know, I think that they have a real shot. Every time Amazon does something radical like this, lots of people say, well, they can't do it. They're not in that business.
Mm-hmm.
And they always blow everybody away. They're a super smart company. They're very disciplined, and they come out with things that are very compelling and always lead you back to a sort of an Amazon-centric view of downloadable content.
Well, and I think you're right that Amazon appeals to a very mainstream user base, and it also appeals to people who are like, I don't really want a bunch of television content apps. I don't really get that. That sounds like a mess to me, and it kind of is, really. I mean, There are people who think it's kind of fun to cobble all of your content together, and then people who say, you know what, Amazon does this really well, and I trust them.
You know, exactly. Amazon siphons, obviously, at least on the Android platform, all of their video into their own products, right? Like, they, all of their other content, their you know, reader content, their music and everything, you can get on any Android device. But their videos, streaming videos through their online service, you can only get through their devices. Is it better for them, do you think, financially, to only offer that and then expect, you know, however many people, you know, that are going to buy those devices for that video content to be their income? Or does it make more sense for them to just open it up to the entire sea of Android devices? Like, I see this and I'm like, okay, I get where they're going. It's kind of a Samsung move. You know, they really believe in their ecosystem and their platform and everything, and they have reason to, but they could benefit so much more if they just opened the gates, I think.
Well, you know, but then they have to compete with Google in a more direct way. The way it is now on their Kindle devices, they, you know, you can't find Google on those devices. They even have their own Whisper Sync service and their Silk browser. They're harvesting data like Google is. They're doing all the things that Google is doing, offering similar types of content. And it's really kind of a shameless exploitation of Android, if you think about it. I mean, Android exists, presumably, to promote Google services. Mm-hmm. Google tries to be open. That's an open question. But here they are exploiting the Android operating system to just completely ignore Google and offer everything. You know they're going to do the same thing if this TV box rumor is true. They also have kind of an Apple thing going on where they have multiple gateway drugs into other services. So, for example, sure. Apple, you know, I think Apple's support of the iPod very early on the Windows platform got a lot of Windows people to switch to Macs over a period of years, because they would go into the Apple store to see something, you know, get a case for their iPod, and they, ooh, look at all the shiny stuff. Mm-hmm. And eventually they converted a lot of people. I think Amazon can do that too. They can convert the book people into Kindle people. They can convert the Kindle people into TV people. They can convert the TV people into buy everything at Amazon people. You know, so it's really in their interest in every way to be very, very Amazon exclusive in everything they do, because, in fact, they do a lot of stuff and they can provide a lot of services. It remains to be seen that if their TV thing is like the tablets, whether they have the little window of the person, the help support person that pops up on your television set sweet. To give you help you find stuff on TV. We're going to find out about the crazy new smartphone market. Sarah's going to tell us all about that. But before we get there, I want to take a break and tell you about Ring Central. Ring Central is a service that we use here at Twit, and it's something that exists in the cloud, and it replaces a big PBX system. PBX systems are the kinds of phone systems that companies use, in big and medium-sized companies, and even small companies. They're expensive, they're complicated, they're difficult to manage, but putting everything in the cloud makes everything super easy. And RingCentral itself was a no-brainer for Twit. It has zero startup costs, which is a huge differentiation from PBX. There's no PBX hardware to install or maintain. And now RingCentral has something new. It's called Meetings. In addition to all that we love about RingCentral, the receiving voicemails through the email, sending receiving fax messages from smartphones, the auto receptionist, and so on, now they have Meetings, which can host face-to-face meetings in high definition and share desktop documents with anyone, anytime, anywhere, on any device. It's very flexible. Meetings makes RingCentral the best business solution on the market today. And you should also know that RingCentral offers an all-inclusive price, under $25 a month per user, and you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. They have a special offer for listeners of TNT. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free for up to 20 phones. So call this number, 800-543-9980. It's 800-543-9980. Or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code. Make sure you use the promo code TWIT. We thank RingCentral for their support of Tech News Today. And it's an awesome service, and you should check it out. Boy, the smartphone market is becoming very intense.
True story. More than 1 billion smartphones were sold last year. This is according to IDC's Worldwide Quarterly Mobile Phone Tracker, a 38.4% increase over 2012. Hello, smartphone world. Now, Apple and Samsung were the only companies that actually are in double-digit smartphone market share. Together, they're enjoying the lion's share of all of the industry profits. However, that combined market share is declining, according to both International Data Corp and Strategy Analytics, both of which show Apple and Samsung's combined market share dropping from about half the market to 47-48%. Not a huge drop, but a drop nonetheless. In earnings calls, Apple reported the sale of 51 million iPhones in the fourth quarter of 2013. Samsung sold 86 million. Big numbers, but these leaders are being overwhelmed by smaller upstarts, fast growth in China, India, and other emerging markets. Huawei, LG, Lenovo, they all grew twice the industry average. Now they own a combined 14% market share. I don't know why I would say that these smaller companies are nipping at the Samsung Apple heels just yet. But that is a trend. You know, a couple of years ago, what are we looking at? 2%? 14% is nothing to sneeze at.
That's right. And around the world in different countries where some of these emerging markets are, I mean, of course, China and India are the big markets that are both the two biggest countries in the world and are also some of the fastest growing from a percentage of per capita basis. All over the world, in Africa, Latin America, and elsewhere, you find individual country markets dominated by a single smartphone. In some countries in Africa, for example, all the smartphones, it seems like, are being sold by Samsung or some other company. And that's really where some of these companies are going to try to get aggressive. I mean, remember that Samsung's original strategy was to start at the bottom end and then build up into super high-end luxury devices while still having lower-end phones. And that's exactly what the Chinese upstarts are doing, and they're very successful at it. So we talked yesterday a little bit about the conflict between Apple and Samsung. Samsung is kind of squeezed between Apple on the high end, the Chinese upstarts on the low end, and they're still trying to compete on all spectrums of the smartphone market. And guess what's happening? Margins are being squeezed. Apple disappointed everybody with their results. I mean, it was pretty good results, but not necessarily for Apple.
When you say Apple disappointed everybody, it's analysts choose these crazy numbers. Apple sells a record number of smartphones. A lot of you out there are going to say, ooh, there's bias, crazy. But it's true. I mean, this happens every quarter. Record number of iPhones sold, and people say, Apple missed their mark.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you're right. That's exactly what happens. They have record sales, and everybody says everybody's disappointed. But I think it's reasonable to a certain extent. I mean, Apple has a track record of building fans that are sustainable fans. So, for example, if you assume that every 2 years, an Apple fan will upgrade to the latest iPhone, then that's you can expect a base from which to grow. And if they're not growing significantly, I mean, they grow a little, a couple million, few million, you expect a lot more growth out of that. You know that there were a lot of people upgrading to an iPhone for the first time. What these numbers really mean is that they're losing people. And we've seen that in the market. They've lost me, for example. I used to be an iPhone user. I had it since, I think, 2008, 2009. I've had an iPhone. Last year, they lost a lot of people. They lost me. I moved to the Android platform. So I think that's kind of what investors are looking at. They're looking at the larger trend of, like, you know, I think the real thing that people are concerned about with Apple is, do they still have the magic touch? There was a period of time between 2010 and 2012 or so where it seemed like Apple could do no wrong. Nobody could touch them. They're the world's largest, most well-capitalized, most valuable company in the world, exceeding even Exxon. And now they're kind of starting to look like a regular company.
I don't think the whole, I used to be an iPhone fan for years and I switched to Android, is really what Apple's concerned with. Strategy Analytics Executive Director Neil Mostyn says, Apple remains strong in the high-end smartphone segment, but its lack of presence in the low-end category is costing it lost volumes in fast-growing emerging markets such as India. You know, Tim Cook said that they had more iPhone activations in China in the last, week than they ever had before. So it's the sort of thing that Apple's aware of, but that's true. Apple has never really wanted any part of that low-end space. You could argue that the 5C was somewhere in the middle, but that was a bit of a disappointment. So I think it's about the potential market that Apple's just not really targeting or hasn't thus far, and that's where it hurts them.
I think for Apple to really move forward and get back to their Apple sort of is a magic company kind of reputation, they're going to need to break into new areas, which Tim Cook promised. So that's probably... he's probably not talking about bigger iPhones there. He's probably talking about the iWatch everybody's waiting for. They also need a lot of radical innovation and change and continue that innovation on the smartphone market, which brings us to our next story. Apple may be working on touchscreens, actually, that double as solar chargers. A newly granted patent describes a laptop with a see-through touch display that charges the laptop through solar power, the display could also be made non-transparent. You throw a switch and it's non-transparent. The laptop is closed. The outside lid could show certain information. Now, this is really interesting in the wake of a prediction by Seeking Alpha investment blogger Matt Margolis that Apple was working on a future iPhone that charges right through the screen. This would be made from sapphire instead of Gorilla Glass, and his prediction was based on an analysis of Apple patents, job postings, capital equipment announcements, and other information. So this is a fascinating development. Apple has so many solar patents, it's ridiculous. If you really look back at all of their solar patents, it's really innovation, a lot of innovative ideas for integrating solar into these devices. The idea that Margolis explains, whether this is true or not, we have no idea. It's kind of a lot of speculation based on some interesting facts that he's gathered. But it enables you to have a much smaller and thinner and lighter phone because you can have a smaller battery. No, solar power wouldn't replace the battery altogether. It wouldn't replace the need to charge. It will give you extended battery life throughout the day because it would be trickle charging that phone and sort of topping it off as you go out throughout the day. But it would enable thinner glass, thinner batteries. And that sounds like the kind of thing Apple would be interested in. The question is, I really don't know that this technology is ready.
Maybe not, but that's why you have patents put in place so that once you figure it out and Samsung says, we're going to do that too, or whoever, then you can say, nope, this is our idea. We thought of it first. It just took us a few years. I don't really care who comes out with the first solar charging phone that works well. I don't care if it's Apple. I don't care who it is. But I want it to happen soon so that everybody jumps on board. Yeah, they'll all sue each other. But eventually, we as the consumers will reap the rewards. It's a great idea. Have the backup be more of a safety net for the times where, you know, for whatever reason, you're sitting in a dark closet or you don't have a reason to charge your phone from solar energy. But I want to see this.
If you've been watching the show, you know that we reported at CES that Alcatel demonstrated a phone that works kind of like this, where the solar charging happens kind of through the screen. And Alcatel itself said, oh, this technology is not ready yet. We're looking at 2015. I'm not sure if in fact Apple is working on this kind of technology, if it's the same kind of technology as Alcatel, but it looks like multiple companies are working on this idea of charging through the screen. I personally think that the ultimate outcome and what we'll have in a few years are smartphones that charge on both sides. They charge on the back, they charge on the front, no matter how you put it down. They charge from natural light, they charge from artificial light. And I think that's going to be a really welcome addition to the long list of features that smartphones have these days.
Yeah, and batteries are undoubtedly one of the biggest complaints that people have about their mobile device. And what's interesting is I'm always, you know, on all that Android, I'm always talking about what we need are, you know, more advances in battery technology. What's the faster end game? Is it better solar technology to charge the battery technology that we already have, or is it new battery technology that lasts a lot longer?
Well, that's one of the problems with batteries is that they don't have their own Moore's law. They evolve very slowly. It's very difficult. Most of the gains we've seen in the last few years with longer lasting devices and, you know, devices that last some amount of time, given the huge amount of power these incredible screens draw, is through management on the software side or in the hardware side and the chip level. It's not in the batteries themselves. Batteries aren't really getting that much better that much faster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a serial entrepreneur, Jason Calacanis, is up to something. What's he doing?
Yes, he and Jason, Gabriel Snyder, who's from the Atlantic Wire editor, have launched a mobile news app and website called Inside, which will have somewhere between 700 and 1,000 updates on any given day. Each one of them will be written by humans, no algorithms, just interesting. Inside summary include a photo, a headline, about 300 characters worth of description about the news. And it's designed that way to cut back on things like link bait articles that everybody knows and doesn't love very much and unnecessary aggregation.
Well, Jason is with us today. His previous startups include Weblogs, Inc. and Mahalo. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jason.
Of course. Great to see you. Wow, I'm blurry, huh? Let's get the Wi-Fi working.
Should try coffee. That'll sharpen you up right away.
Hopefully, yes.
So does the world...
Congratulations on the new gig, too, by the way.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your startup.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome, but does the world need another news reader?
Well, if I asked you what is the main way you check your news on your mobile phone, I'm guessing you would answer either Twitter or Chrome. Would I be right?
Yes. Those are two of the five or so ways. That's right.
Right. And so if that's what I did for the last year and a half. I've been asking people, what do you use for mobile news? And while people could name mobile news apps, they might rattle off, you know, Flipboard or Editions or, you know, Pulse. Most people weren't actually using them that often. So it sort of led me into this rabbit hole of why. And I think the main reason was the headlines that writers are putting together today, and most of the content, let's be honest, is not real journalism. Since founding Engadget and Autoblog and Silicon Valley Reporter before that, something really bad has happened in the content space, which is everybody's just reblogging everybody and not doing original journalism. Nobody takes the time like you are today to actually call up and say, hey, can you be a guest on our program? Can we talk about your product? They just churn out blog posts. And then they write link baiting headlines to try to make them sort of optimize on SEO, which results in wasting consumers' time. And if you try to do this manually, if you try to do it in an automated fashion, which I actually did for a couple of months, you get a really bad result. Because if you pull together every story on Yahoo firing DeCastro or, you know, Apple's latest patent, you get 50 stories and nobody actually has done any original reporting and it's all link baiting headlines. So it actually wastes more time. And so what we did in the app was I just did an experiment. I actually did this on something called the Launch Ticker at launch.co for a year before we launched Inside as a like sort of minimum viable product test. I just said to a writer, read every tech story and just write me 300 characters and 40 words and 10 facts. And after reading that every day, I realized, wow, I'm spending one-fifth the time, but I'm getting 10 times the amount of information. This is massive leverage. And when you're an entrepreneur and you find that massive leverage, you kind of lean into it and try to develop a product around it. And so that's what we do with Inside. And if you play with the product on your smartphone, what you'll find is you're going to read 10 times as much. You're going to get 10 times as much content. And you're only going to link to the original source, which means we're almost taking out all the noise, all the sort of sugar and empty calories and artificial flavors and sweeteners. And you just get this really like healthy kind of feeling after you use it.
You know, this reminds me, and I'm not the first person to point out the comparison to an app called Circa, who Matt Galligan and Anthony DeRosa are doing really well on, which is also human powered, right? And then on the other side of the spectrum, an app like Sumly, which is now owned by Yahoo, which is completely algorithmic, which sort of reaches the same goal, but in a different way. It seems to me that scaling your business model that is human powered is a lot more difficult. So why not go algorithmic?
Yeah, so a great question, Sarah. Number one, Sumly used, and I looked at investing in Sumly. I angel invest sometimes in companies, and I'm actually an angel investor in Circa and big fan. So looking at Sumly, I looked at actually investing in that company, and I think Nick's a very talented young executive, and he designs a good product, but the summaries were terrible. And the reason is it was using this technology to like sort of automate it. And algorithms and technology can't summarize properly right now. So if you actually look at the summaries, it doesn't work. And he'll just have to go to humans to do it because only a human can tell that Kara Swisher broke the story about DeCastro being fired and which sentence is the most important. It's just too hard for computers right now. It's going to take another 10 or 20 years for a computer to be able to read a New York Times story and tell you what the 40 most important words are and 10 most important facts. So putting that aside, Circa... and I think Matt's just awesome and the team over there was really, you know, we started about maybe a year before they did with the Launch Ticker. And so I showed, he was a fan of the Launch Ticker. I was a fan of what he showed me with Circa. And I was like, listen, we're kind of in the same space here, but I think it's different. I'd love to invest in your company. He let me invest. And so I was very happy with that. And if you look at what they're doing, they say they're journalists and I believe them. And I think they're doing real journalism. And so they might do a couple of dozen stories a day and they do them very long. If you've ever seen the product, when they get their teeth into something like, you know, Hillary Clinton or something, and not that you would want to get your teeth into it necessarily, but you get the idea. When you get into that story of Benghazi or whatever, they're going to really follow that story for months and months, and they're going to do a great job on it. So I think they're sort of like the new New York Times. And I sort of see us as more of a platform that does curation. We do zero journalism. We're never going to do journalism. We're going to find the best journalism. And I think Circa's some of the best journalism going on, and we're going to link to it. So every day we wind up linking to two or three Circa stories. And, you know, just on the nature of whose idea this will wind up being credited to. I think a lot of people had this idea around the same time. There's another person, Jason Horshorn, who does something called Media Redefined, which is an awesome curation. There's Brain Pickings, which is a blog slash curation. Cool Hunting was an original sort of curator. And of course, Laughing Squid was one of the best, most original ones. So sure. A lot of people who get credit for this idea. I think on a business level, whoever packages it best and whoever focuses in on it longest with the most resources will ultimately be the winner.
Uh-huh.
And my job as CEO is to sort of just set us up to possibly be the winner, right?
Well, It sounds very compelling, and you're also using the business model, as I understand it, is native advertising. So there's a challenge there to make sure that it's quality native advertising rather than the other kind. And I also, you know, there are several things about this as a journalist that I like, and one thing that I don't like. The things that I do like is that you do focus in on the person who broke the story, and I think that distinction is something that's undervalued in a lot of the curated content sort of sites that we have.
Yep.
And so that's awesome. I also like the fact that you've sort of invented a unique style. The atomic units, those 300-word summaries, appear to have already be forming their own style of language, which is almost like a headline style that goes throughout the entire summary, which is, I think, kind of compelling. It's, we're talking about, you know, abbreviation of words, the removal of a few words, kind of thing that people do on Twitter to squeeze it all in there. So that's pretty cool. The one thing I don't like is that if you're putting a headline with the 4, 5, 6 facts, the basic facts of the article, I don't think people are going to be clicking through to the original article. I think they're going to read you and then just move on to the next item on inside.com. So you really promoting journalism, or are you replacing?
Yeah. I think that's three astute observations. Just on the middle one, the update and the style of the update, we spent a lot of time on that, and I'm really happy that you noticed that we're actually developing our own vernacular and format there. So we are really focused on, like, you cannot in the content management system publish less than 280 characters or more than 300, and really making it tight. Now, to your point about being fair, I'm a long-term writer, as you guys know, and do my own podcast. So I'm a content creator.
Yep.
I always want to be as fair as possible. Two things are going to happen here. One, we are writing 40 words. If it's a story about Benghazi, or it's a story about Hillary Clinton running in 2016, or it's, you know, a recap of girls, we're going to get you 40 words. It's not enough when you're seeing that story about Quentin Tarantino going off the reservation about his script leaking. You're going to want to drill down.
Jason, I'm sorry. Speaking of keeping it short, we have to move on, and I appreciate you coming on today. You can find Jason at calacanis.com, and you can also find his new startup at inside.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Jason.
It is my pleasure.
Thanks again.
Good luck.
Well, Google is offering a prescription Google Glass for eyeglasses at long last. This has been rumored for quite a while. For $225 more than the $1,500 price of Google Glass, Google will sell you titanium frames in any of 4 styles and 8 colors. Google also added 2 more options for clip-on sunglasses, and those cost about $150 each. Google Glass is available currently only to about 30,000 people, including Jason and me. We haven't gotten Sarah converted yet. But this is expected to ship this year. Do you think this is going to make a difference in the acceptance level of Google Glass in society?
I think in the way that, so I don't wear glasses, right? So it's like, if I don't know, if there aren't really cool sunglasses for me to wear, it just doesn't apply to me. So if Google Glass is something that I've got to wear glasses anyway, and then I've got all these other bells and whistles, that absolutely makes sense. I mean, you've got this whole segment of people saying, well, I have to wear glasses. Now give me a reason that I want all of this other stuff. Google Glass is, I mean, my biggest gripe has always been, I think that it doesn't look that great, but fashion is different things to different people. I will not deny that having all the capabilities that Google Glass has in my left eye is very cool.
One of the things that people use Google Glass for is while they're driving, they can get turn-by-turn directions, but Apple has a different plan for what people do in the car. What is that? What are they hatching, and what new information has come out today?
Well, a developer named Stephen Troughton Smith posted a video to YouTube that he claims is iOS in the car, Apple's upcoming car dashboard system. It's running in a simulator, at least in the video, although Troughton Smith says iOS in the car is already present in iOS 7.0.3. It just can't be activated by default yet. Now, when you're looking at the video, the first thing that struck me is, hey, that's kind of neat. You know, you're doing something, it's supposedly touch-enabled on your onboard video system and it affects the phone and vice versa. However, one of the things that strikes me, and again, you got to, let's just take this with a grain of salt, but assuming that this is somewhat what Apple's working on, they don't mirror each other. The onboard system looks completely different than what you're seeing on your iPhone or your iOS device. And that is a little odd to me.
Yeah.
I guess you probably don't, or you're not going to be looking at them both at the same time, so maybe it doesn't matter. But I don't really like the idea of something seeming so different in my car than what I have in my hand.
Right, and it sounds like they're trying to optimize it. They're probably having to negotiate these interfaces with the car companies, and I think we're going to see these in a lot of car companies this year. Yeah, it's a little weird. It's a little second screeny, so kind of like the video game thing, but it doesn't really work in the car. And again, you don't want to be looking at both your phone. You don't want to be managing multiple screens in your car. One screen is dangerous enough. Well, I'm going to tell you about a really, really cool way to play with Lego in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace.com. Squarespace, as you know, is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Life is too short to be publishing lousy websites. You can very easily, with Squarespace, publish a beautiful, functional, wonderful website that looks fantastic on mobile devices. It looks great on phones. It looks great on tablets. It looks great on laptops and desktops, big screens, small screens. It looks fantastic no matter how you look at it. And, of course, the design will be great if you use one of their 20 new beautiful templates. You can start out with a template and then modify it, tweak it, and customize it so that your website is completely unique, the only one like it on the entire internet. It's easy to use, but if you need support, they offer support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 24/7 support. And I've used their tech support. They are amazing. They get right back to you and they answer your questions. They don't give you a runaround. They don't make you jump through some kind of knowledge base. They just, a human being answers your question to your satisfaction and right away. It's fantastic. They start at just $8 a month and include a free domain name if you sign up for a year. As I said, they're mobile ready and they have a new Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad that lets you check site stats like page views, unique visitors, social media follows. With the blog app, you can make text updates, drag and tap and drag images and change layouts and monitor comments on the go. It's a fantastic site, a fantastic service, and of course they take care of all the hosting, so you don't even have to think about it. It's a really the best way to make a beautiful website, keep it up and running, and serve it out to every kind of device that anybody will want to access it from. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT1, one is for the month of January, to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of this show. And just remember that Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. Well, for you Lego fans, and you know who you are, you're going to love this news. Google and Lego have collaborated to build virtual Lego inside the Chrome browser. The feature uses WebGL to let you build anything out of on-screen Lego, then publish your creation on Google+. It has photorealistic quality, so they actually look like real Lego, and they can be built in a variety of environments and platforms. And best of all, unlike real Lego, you have an unlimited number of bricks, billions and billions of bricks to make anything you want, and then you can share them with your friends on Google+. So you can even use a touch device to build them with your hands. It's so realistic that if you step on a screen that's running this, it's going to hurt really bad on your foot. Amazing, amazing technology.
I know that feel.
Yes, it's horrible.
Yeah, no fun.
Well, that's our show. Remember to send your news tips to our email address at tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW and leave a message. Also, upvote the stories you'd like to see us cover on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and visit our Tech News Today Google Plus community. If you haven't already, subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.